Chapter 5. The Dream Gem. "So what do you think, Pelor?" They were back in the Wandering Star. Ruggalo was rolling the blue gemstone around his palm and grinning. "I'm gonna dream of a slave girl." Kaladin was shocked.
"You're not going to try it?"
"Of course. We have to test our merchandise, don't we?"
He held the jewel up to the light and squinted through it thoughtfully.
"This gem is not unique. Gundrum had several of them. Perhaps we could acquire a bulk load. We're in luck, Pelor. I sense riches."
"Don't meddle in arcane powers."
"Oh, don't worry," Ruggalo assured him. "If it works at all, I expect it just makes your dreams more vivid or something. Like making you have the same dream twice, but stronger the second time. That would be like having a dream come true, wouldn't it?"
"You should be more careful," Kaladin warned him glumly. "I sense magic. As for riches, somehow I don't imagine that peculiar character Gundrum will leave us much of a profit margin. His sister unnerves me too. Didn't you notice her interest in you?"
Ruggalo had to admit that Angelica's attentions had made him uneasy. She had been playing with him, no doubt of that. It gave him the sense of being a hapless prey hypnotized by a predator. He wasn't sure he would be able to resist her advances for any length of time, in spite of how strange they made him feel. Still, he didn't intend to let matters reach that stage.
"We'll make our own profit margins," he said confidently. "Can you follow a ship through the warp, Pelor?"
"You're not thinking of trailing Gundrum?"
"Why not? There's a trade route to be discovered."
"The Astronomicon is weak out there. We could get lost, or more probably get blown out of space for our pains. That trade route, as you call it, is those people's secret. You've seen how much they want to guard it."
"That's a chance we'll just have to take."
"I don't like it, and I don't think you should use that jewel." Ruggalo tossed the gem in the air and caught it again.
"Well, I'll tell you in the morning if anything happened."
It seemed there was nothing Kaladin could do. He left the cabin, retiring to his quarters. Ruggalo prepared to settle down. He pulled off his outer garments, lay down on the pallet on the floor, and pulled a padded blanket over him for cover. The uncut gem he placed under his pillow. He didn't expect anything particularly remarkable. However, he fell asleep with unusual swiftness. And sometime during the night, he began to dream. Usually, Ruggalo's dreams were confused and dim. He remembered little on waking. Now, for once, they were vivid and full of wish fulfillment. He was on the bridge of what had been his father's flagship, and was now his flagship. In echelon around the flagship were all the other vessels in the retinue, fully manned and equipped. He was a successful rogue trader, fully accredited in his own right, with more than 30 years' experience. Currently, as so often in the past, he had gone far beyond the range of the Astronomicon, like the adventurers of those wild and heady days of millennia before, when there was no Astronomicon, fearless and daring anything, pitting his wits as a man of the Imperium against all comers. A planet swelled below them, mottled and coloured like a rotting fruit, glowing in the light of its sun. His outfit had discovered, not for the first time, an unknown alien civilization that was beginning to develop space travel. Nuclear-tipped missiles arced up from the planet's surface. Ruggalo's little fleet was about to engage in a war with an entire world, indeed, an entire alien species. Ruggalo would win that war, of course, and would make off with his ship's hold, filled with alien treasures, as well as data on the defeated world for which the Administratum would pay well. The dream dissolved in a jumble of images, as dreams will. Ruggalo was a boy again. He was visiting the house of his friend, the son of a wealthy noble family. In his bedroom he opened his toy chest and took out a casket, lavishly filigreed with rich workmanship. Words were carved on its sides. "Kill the mutant. Destroy the alien." Setting it on a table, he lifted the lid to reveal 4 model figures lying inside. 2 were of space marines in full power armor, 1 crimson, 1 purple, blazoned with their chapter emblems. Of the other 2, 1 was a grossly mutated human, Head 3 times normal size, eyes, mouth, nose and ears all misplaced, as were the arms and legs. The other was a monster, a black tentacled creature with gleaming scythe claws at the end of each limb. Both mutant and alien were ugly, vicious and wicked. There were also 2 control units for animating the mechanized models as they were pitted against one another. How Ruggalo had envied the spoiled rich boy his expensive toy. And of course, his friend always made him play either alien or mutant, and the game was cleverly engineered so that, with 2 players of equal skill, the Space Marine nearly always won. Any other arrangements would have been bad for a child's education. Now, here, he was playing with his fantastic toy again, only this time it belonged to him. It was he who was holding the Space Marine control in the palm of his hand, and the crimson-armoured Adeptus Astartes warrior's chainsword was disposing of the mutant, limbs detaching and flying everywhere. It was at that moment he realised with a sudden lucidity that he was dreaming. Sadness overcame him, a great feeling of loss. When he woke up, he would lose his marvellous possession. How to keep it? Inspiration came to him. He placed the figures back in their casket. Then he willed himself to dream that he was lying in bed. He placed the casket at the foot of the bed. Then he went to sleep. Maynard Ruggalo opened his eyes to see that the chrono panel was signalling early morning at the settlement's Caligula longitude. The dream of being a boy was fresh in his mind. This was unusual for him. He rarely remembered his dreams. He threw off the cover and sat up, stretching himself, thinking of the day ahead. The eye trader Gundrum was an oddball. He wasn't sure quite how to deal with him. He was about to come to his feet when something at the end of the panel caught his attention. It was a casket, richly filigreed. On the side, in carved relief and painted silver, were the words, "Kill the mutant, destroy the alien."
"Pelor!" he shouted agency. "Pelor, come here, quick!"
Kaladin appeared in seconds, alarm on his face. "What's the matter?"
"Tell me, in all seriousness, am I still dreaming?"
Perplexed, the navigator stared at him. "Not unless I am too."
"Look at this."
Ruggalo lifted the lid of the casket, showing the exotic models within.
"I dreamed of this in the night. Now it's here, real."
"You used the jewel?"
"Yes, I used it. It works."
Kaladin stepped forward and gingerly took out one of the Space Marines from the casket, almost as if afraid it would burn him. Experimentally, he moved the model's arms and legs. "A child's toy," he remarked blankly. "Are you really sure it wasn't here before? Part of the cargo?"
"I'm certain. I haven't seen one of these since I was a boy."
Kaladin replaced the figure, then wiped his hand on his clothing as if it had become tainted. "It's impossible," he announced. "It must be sorcery. The gem is making us see and touch things that aren't there. Get rid of it." Ruggalo considered this.
"Well, let's put it to the test."
He went to his pallet and retrieved the dream gem from beneath his pillow.
"I'll take this out of the ship, walk away with it, and bury it. If what you say is right, the toy should disappear. A sorcerer's delusion couldn't work at a very long range, I imagine."
Swiftly, he dressed, left the cabin, climbed out of the port, and descended to the ground with the gem in his pocket. It was no more than an hour after dawn. Steam rose from the mossy plain surrounding the space ground, a daily morning effect caused by the strong sunlight on the damp plant life. He looked around him, allowing his gaze to rest on the painted spaceship parked some distance away. He knew now that it was Gundrum's ship. He had seen him and his party entering it the night before. Walking away from the wandering star until he had reached what he judged to be a safe distance, he looked around to make sure he was unobserved before digging his heel into a soft patch of earth. He dropped the gem into the shallow depression, covered it with a large stone, and walked back to the ship. He entered the cargo cabin to find that Kaladin had cleared a space on the table and was manipulating the crimson-armored Space Marine from the control unit, swinging the chainsword, making it step forward and back. The navigator started guiltily as Ruggalo came in, hurriedly putting down the unit.
"I hit the gem almost a mile away,"
Ruggalo said with quiet satisfaction,
"and the toy is still here."
Kaladin gave a worried shake of his head. Materializing dream objects. How could it be possible? Not even the techno-magi of Mars can do that.
Who cares? Ruglo said feverishly. Perhaps the Mars Magi can do it. People high up in the Adeptus Terra keep a lot of things to themselves. Or maybe it's a secret known to alien tech priests. Gundron found the Wraith Guard in the I-2, and that's alien. There's all sorts of stuff in there. It's a treasure house, all unknown to the Imperium, and just because the Navy hasn't the nerve to go in there. By the Emperor, what a find.
I can't believe any tech priest could do it, human or alien, Kaladin said, his voice burdened. Demons. Demons might be able to do it. That's the only thing I can think of. Leave that gem where it is, Maynard.
Pelor, Pelor, there are no demons. It's a story to frighten the ignorant with.
Kaladin's lip curled sardonically. That's a foolish attitude to take, if I may say so. The Navy commander seemed to be wiser. Not only is the Eye a warp storm, the biggest in the known galaxy, where navigation is impossible, it's also a place of mystery and evil. If everything one hears is true. He glanced at the casket and space marine. I think there might be demons here.
People here on Caligula are trading with the Eye. Maybe the storm has quietened down or something. Gundrum and his sister know a way in and out for a start.
Don't believe everything that Gundrum says. Neither he nor his sister are navigators. Unless there's a new breed outside the houses, which I don't believe for a moment. I suppose they could be doing 4 light-year jumps without using a navigator, but I don't believe that either. You can't get anywhere that way.
4 light-year jumps, Ruglo nodded thoughtfully.
Navigators were taken so much for granted that one tended to forget that the navigator gene didn't occur among alien races, as far as he knew. They had no individuals who could see into the warp, without which only short warp jumps were possible. Hence, there was nothing to match the vast, glorious Imperium of mankind. He dismissed the matter with an impatient wave of his hand.
Negative thinking. That's no way to get rich.
After his experience the day before, Kaladin was reluctant to visit the settlement again. Ruggalo elected to go alone. He retrieved the dream gem and left the space ground. Carts were passing down the dirt street of the settlement, hauled by beasts of burden with long matted fur and an ambling gait. The carts were filled with farm produce, traded, Ruggalo guessed, for money or for goods brought in from elsewhere. From the Eye, perhaps. He entered the same drinking hall as before and cast about for Gundrum. There was no sign of him or his sister, the ravishing Angelica. There was no Wraith Guard either. Neither, he was glad to note, was there any sign of the Free who had molested Kaladin the day before. He strode to the bar and spoke to the barman.
"Where's Gundrum?"
The barman answered in an unfamiliar accent, offhandedly wiping his hands on a cloth.
"Think you that I know the whereabouts of all? I serve drinks, I serve smokes. Have you money?"
Reluctantly, Ruggalo parted with a few coins for a tankard of evil-tasting brew. Gundrum was probably in his ship, he reflected, but knowing the ways of traders, there was no point in trying to visit him there. It was regarded as ill-mannered. For the first time, he spotted, seated at an empty table, the small man in the green beret and caress singlet, who had pointed out Gundrum to him the day before. After a moment, he recalled his name, Kyler. He sauntered over and casually joined him.
"Remember me? I'm looking for Gundrum. I gather you know him."
"Sure," the man gave a lopsided smile. "I'm his partner."
Ruggalo raised his eyebrows.
"I didn't know he had a partner, except for his sister Angelica. What's the nature of your partnership exactly?"
He knew this was an impudent question. The stranger, however, did not seem offended.
"I go with him on his trips."
"Indeed. Tell me, do they have a navigator? Gundrum said his sister does it, but that's hardly possible."
The man laughed.
"Possible or not, Angelica does it."
"She doesn't have a warp eye."
Ruggalo fell silent, realizing he had been making an assumption. Because Angelica did not have the air of a navigator, he had presumed she wasn't one. But she could be hiding a warp eye, as Kaladin did.
"So, where's Gundrum now?"
"Delivering the Eldar robot to the Imperial Commander's men," somewhere along the coast. How did he come by that alien-built ship of his, the coloured one?
It is an alien, Kyler grinned. He had it painted out in the eye. For some reason, its shape changed too. Almost everything can change out there. It's a place of wonders, or perhaps, I should say, places. It's huge. Bigger than the whole rest of the universe, some people say. Of course, that's an exaggeration.
Ruggalo was surprised at how ready Kylo was to talk. Hadn't Gundrum criticised him for that? But despite his glowing description, Kylo's chirpy attitude seemed to be fading. He looked weary, and his words were forced. He glanced shiftily at the bar, then stealthily produced a coloured bottle from the shoulder bag he carried and poured from it into a tiny goblet. He knocked the drink back with one toss of his head. Ecstasy transformed his face. Ruggalo recognised the liqueur Gundrum had given him the day before. He waited until the man seemed recovered before speaking again.
Do you know what dream gems are? I'm interested in getting some. A bulk load. Can you and Gundrum get them?
Gundrum can get them by the barrel load, I expect. But what do you want with them? They're not as easy to sell in the Imperium as you might think. Stuff like that can bring the Inquisition down on your head.
Ruggalo smiled to himself. What Kyler had said was certainly true in principle, but not in practice. There was a big demand for alien contraband in the Imperium, especially among the wealthier members of the Administratum who hungered for the exotic. And how much would the Adeptus Mechanicus pay for something that could produce matter out of nothing? Neither Gundrum nor the man he was talking to appeared to understand what the gems implied. To them, they were just curios.
Will Gundrum be back today?
Gundrum is erratic. He changes his mind a lot. One day he'll go into the eye and never come back like all the others.
A shadow fell across the table. The man with the half-melted face stood over them, the burnouse dangling on one shoulder. He stabbed a finger at Ruggalo.
You mean to go into the eye? I can see it in your mind. You are a fool.
He swept on before Ruggalo could reply. Kyler poured himself another slug of the liqueur. He smiled sourly.
Another dissatisfied ex-partner of Gundrum's, he said. He's given you good advice, though. Forget about doing business with Gundrum. You don't want those dream gems. And definitely forget about the eye. Death is a blessing compared with what can happen to you there.
He raised his goblet in a brief toast.
Still, what's the good of talking to you? You don't believe me. That eager look you've got in your eyes. I've seen it before. Too many times. Me, I'm sick of the old business.
Then why are you still in it? Ruggalo asked him.
At first it was for adventure, and an easy way to make a living. But now, he knocked back the liqueur again, and seemed to pass into another realm.
He's addicted to it, Ruggalo thought.
Too many people were telling him not to go into the eye. Ruggalo was cynical about such warnings. Nobody around here acted from altruistic motives. If they were trying to frighten him off, that meant the eye was a good place to go, and easier to deal with than they claimed.
When Gundrum comes back, tell him I want to talk to him, he said.
Kyler started mumbling.
No, no, no. You don't want to see Gundrum. Gundrum is bad. He has crossed over. So has Angelica. Has she been taking an interest in you? Watch out. It's all right for her and her brother. They're good at making agreements. Others end up like 4-4. Go back to where it's safe. Space Marines, Emperor, Inquisition.
The liqueur had obviously befuddled the little man's brain. Ruggalo left him trying one more time under the suspicious gaze of the barman to pour from a clandestine bottle. That night, Ruggalo put the dream gem under his pillow again. He had been only partly joking when he had wished for a slave girl. Now that he knew it was possible, he willed himself to dream of one as he approached sleep. As before, his dreams were unusually vivid, and at first he did dream himself into a harem where scantily clad women danced and swayed to lilting music. Briefly, he remembered that this was but a dream and told himself that one of the women would be his when he woke up. But then they all faded. Now he was in a bazaar he had visited many years ago. It was on a very hot planet where life was only possible under air-conditioned domes and arcades. The cooled air currents made the canvases of the booths ripple. Occasionally, a searing blast of hot air went blowing through the bazaar as one of the outer doors was opened, causing the cooling units to whine in protest. Again, Ruggalo's dream was the fulfillment of a thwarted desire. Quite by accident, he had come upon a memory portrait in the form of a large enameled brooch with a damascene frame. These were rare, made by some lost art, and few people even knew of their existence. In this case, the portrait was of some high-born lady, though she must have lived centuries ago, for the portrait was at least that old. She was in the bloom of her life, her oval face surrounded by dark curls, her large brown eyes regarding the beholder soulfully, her full bosom definiously clad in sensuously peach-coloured silk. As Ruggalo gazed at the portrait, her memories came flooding into his mind. He glimpsed the life of the nobility, their great houses, their power, their wealth, their elegant social life. He felt he knew her friends as she knew them. He seemed to remember her upbringing, her childhood, her parents and grandparents. And what of the present? Who did she love now? The portrait artist could not, of course, reveal that. Yet there were hints. Closed doors in her memory, which seemed to tell more than they were meant to conceal. Unfortunately, the storekeeper knew the value of the brooch. Ruggalo's attempts to buy it as cheap gore-gore met with no more than a patient smile. Ruggalo offered more and more, until he was gone to more than he could actually raise, and still it was not enough. Ruggalo had been forced to give up and go away in a fury, wondering if he dared come back later and steal the brooch, a question which contained its own answer, for the punishment of theft on this harsh world was too terrible to think about. Now, so many years later, he had a second chance. Once again, the stallholder was demanding a price he could not pay, the same price he would expect to realise himself. So he hefted the portrait in his hand and thought fervently, "This is what I want." "Maynard, wake up!" Pelor Kaladin's voice in his ear brought him out of the dream with a jerk. He opened his eyes and saw the Wandering Star's cabin around him. Automatically, he looked at the chrono panel. It was well after dawn. Kaladin had dressed himself and was gesticulating nervously. There was something small, hard and metallic in Ruggalo's hand. He lifted it before his face, his eyes widening in wonder. A damascene frame, enameled surface, oval face and soulful eyes. Already little flashes of imparted memory were flickering at the back of his mind. Fully awake now, he drew a deep breath and held out the brooch for Kaladin to see. "Look, Pelor, look! I dreamt it. It became real, just like the Space Marines game." The navigator glanced at the brooch. "Very nice," he said coolly. "But I thought you might like to know that Gundrum's ship is readying for takeoff." "What?" Ruggalo threw aside the pallet's covering and staggered to the main board. Kaladin had already activated the view screen, rotating the view to where the rainbow ship was powering up, a steam-reefed glow coming from its venturer. Kyla had said that Gundrum was erratic. Of course, Ruggalo didn't know exactly what Kyla's relationship with Gundrum was. Presumably, Gundrum and his crew were going into the eye to get more trade goods. If they expected to trade with Ruggalo when he got back to Caligula, they would be disappointed. Why buy from Gundrum if he could go to the source? "Wait till he's gone," he ordered Kaladin. "Then follow. Can you do that without him knowing?" Kaladin said calmly, "I don't remember accepting employment with you." Ruggalo groaned. He had been hoping to avoid this. "You have your ability back. It's your duty to use it," he said, hoping he sounded convincing. "You're a navigator again. I suggest we team up together." "Not," Kaladin said firmly, "if it means going into the Eye of Terror." "You know, you're too ready to be frightened by rumours," Ruggalo complained. "The Eye isn't something supernatural. It's just a massive volume of space that's been hit by a warp storm.
Anyway, I don't believe for a moment that Gundrum is going deep into the eye. He's found a planet on the fringe of it that trade goods find their way to, somehow, from the worlds inside. A world that nobody else knows about. He's onto something good, but he's too addle-brained to know it, and he's not exploiting it properly. I'll show him what a real professional can do.
Kaladin ignored the boast. The trouble with you is, you've closed your mind to what evil forces exist in this galaxy of ours. Essentially, you lack imagination. The trader snorted.
Listen, I've seen rather more of this galaxy than you have. I've seen aliens, visited worlds outside the Imperium, but I've never seen demons, and I don't believe they exist.
Not even the one you said was impersonating my mother.
Well, that was just...
To fool me.
Ruggolo shrugged off his embarrassment. Look, I'll grant the Emperor is a god, if you like. I can accept that, but nothing else.
He paused.
But for me, you wouldn't have recovered your navigator ability. And you can't be certain you're completely cured yet. You need me. And I'm not ready to go back to more civilized worlds yet. There's nothing for me there. I'm my father's son, a rogue trader in spirit, if not in fact. I vote for going on.
Kaladin licked his lips. He knew that Ruggolo was playing on his sense of honour, applying moral blackmail, in fact. The trouble was, it was working. It was true what he had said. He had forced him to face up to his mother's ghost, if it was his mother. He had made a navigator of him. On the viewscreen, the painted spaceship was suddenly enveloped in flame and superheated steam. A roar resounded through the hull of the wandering star. The vessel lifted off the ground, hovered above the field for a few moments, rotating idly as if turning in the wind, then jetted straight for the sky with a fading rumble.
"Make your mind up, Pelor," Ruggolo shouted. "On to riches or back to defeat?"
He was like a child looking forward to a special jaunt. There was no time for reflection. Kaladin could follow a trail through the warp if it was made recently enough, but tracking a ship through real space to its jumping-off point was a different matter. The radiation from a real space drive dispersed quickly. He threw up his hands in resignation.
"Prepare for takeoff,"
Ruggolo grinned. While the trader strapped himself in, Kaladin took the pilot's seat and immediately began warming up the prime mover. There was a hollow roar, and a faint shiver ran through the ship's frame. He took them surging into orbit, executing an outward spiral which took them steadily further from the surface of the planet. The painted ship had to be given time to get away, or Gundrum would quickly spot that it was being shadowed. Before long, the instruments detected the trail of ions, postrions, and decay products, revealing the recent passage of a real space drive. Ruggolo bent his head to the scryer, scanning ahead in the direction the trail took. A faint, moving spot appeared on it, picked out from the background of stars and receding rapidly.
"There it is! Gundrum's ship!"
Kaladin nodded.
"We'll wait until it no longer shows."
They now had the other ship's direction. It was following a shallow curve straight out of the system, at an angle from the plane of the planetary orbits. Kaladin fed power to the drive again. The wandering star shot off in pursuit. After 5 hours, they had come to the edge of the region where the gravitational power of Caligula's sun prevented entry into the warp. Kaladin pulled down the cocoon navigators used to pilot through the warp and diverted power. With a stomach-churning wrench, they were suddenly in the warp, the immaterium, the in-between. There were countless names for it. The Sea of Lost Souls was the one Kaladin did not like. In the three-dimensional jungle, which was how his mind saw the warp, it was as though Gundrum's ship had pushed its way through the foliage, flattening it slightly. He had only to follow this trail before the foliage closed in again, like going through a partly filled-in tunnel. It hardly surprised him that this tunnel went in the direction of the Eye of Terror. The hours passed. It would be days, probably, before the painted ship reached its destination. In the meantime, they would both have to sleep. The ships of the Imperial Navy would never set out with only one navigator on board. For others, for free traders making a living with small spacecraft, the case was different. They could afford, usually could only find, a single pilot capable of steering through the warp currents. Some navigators took drugs to keep them awake for extended periods, but these were apt to cause hallucinations if used too often. Many a ship had come to grief as a result. Otherwise, a navigator would park his ship in a dead spot in the currents while he slept, hoping it would not drift too far off course, or else allow himself to be carried sleeping on what appeared to be a smooth current, hoping not to be carried hopelessly off course. Either way, he did not dare to sleep for more than an hour or two at a time. For Pelor Kaladin, the warp currents consisted of winds blowing through the jungle and stirring up the foliage. If the currents were violent, the jungle itself would begin to move. Boles and vast green ferns appearing to become uprooted and hurling themselves at speed through the immaterium, together with leering faces which from time to time showed themselves. None of this concerned Maynard Ruggalo. He could see none of it. At length he announced that he was tired and left Kaladin wrapped in his cocoon. For privacy, he retired to the living quarters proper, which he had allowed Kaladin to use, and he took the dream gem with him. Smoothing out the bed and slipping the stone under the pillow, he settled himself down to sleep. Did the gem stir up dreams as well as make them real? It was true that for the past two nights, Ruggalo, usually a sound sleeper, had dreamed more vividly than ever before. Now, minutes after he dropped off to sleep, he entered a stream of dreams which seemed to reel themselves off one after another, like sliding down a helter-skelter, and all in brilliant colour. At first they were pleasant. He dreamed of friends, as he had known in the past, of good times he had experienced, of the youthful voyages he had taken with his father. He dreamed of meeting a wonderful woman who became his adoring companion, almost his slave. That dream began to turn a little sinister when the woman turned into Angelica, the sister of Gundrum. Then he dreamed that she produced a knife and used it to cut off both her breasts, the blood streaming from her mutilated chest. Angelica threw back her head and laughed, waving her arms in the air. Her green eyes sparkled with a perverse pleasure. Then she was gone. Ruggalo found himself plunging through a verdant jungle of monstrous unknown plants. He did not know it, but it was the same jungle Kaladin saw when he looked into the warp. Faces leered from it. Impossible-looking creatures peeped between the stretching boles and the shivering leaves. Ruggalo came to a clearing. It was at this point that the dream turned into a nightmare. A creature waited for him there. A creature such as he had never imagined. A creature compounded out of the most vicious parts of every predatory animal. A huge raptor's beak jutted from a narrow bossed face with staring avian eyes. There were four legs with razor-sharp talons, apparently designed for kicking and disemboweling, and more limbs that were a cross between human arms and avian wings, spreading metallic-looking feathers which glittered red and gold, ending in long pincers. That was not all. The creature had a tail which lashed from side to side and carried a sting the size of a power sword, while from muscular shoulders sprouted long tentacles equipped with rows of suckers. But worst of all, it spoke to him.
"Ah, Maynard Ruggalo," it purred. "How could you have been so foolish? It is tiresome to feed on dead meat. Come, be a tasty morsel for me. Let me feed on you while you are alive. Let me suck the entrails from your belly and the thoughts from your brain."
Ruggalo's legs seemed made of lead as he turned and fled in panic. Fungi squashed and popped underfoot, puffing out clouds of spores which surrounded him like a fog and made it difficult to see. Looking back, he saw the monster which knew his name ambling after him in leisurely fashion, gaining on him without effort. The terror and helplessness which overcame him made him shriek uncontrollably. He seemed to have no strength. He moved as if underwater, his feeble limbs failing to answer the urgings of his brain.
"Maynard!"
purred the voice from the great beak. It seemed to be right next to his ear. He felt the hard beak itself nuzzle him. A tentacle touched his shoulder. A hefty pincer stroked his face and a great acid stench made him retch. It was as his panic reached its pitch that a desperate thought came to him, a last ray of hope in his distress. This could be a dream, a nightmare, I can escape if I make myself wake up. Otherwise... His shrieking had stopped. His terror had struck him dumb. Now he tried to shout out again, but all that came was a feeble croak. He tried again, and heard a wailing, unsteady voice that might or might not have been his own, echoing through the blinding spore fog. "Wake up! Wake up! Wake up!" He was trying to force his eyes open, making them bulge desperately in what he hoped was his nightmare. It was as the sharp beak dipped down to his soft, bulging abdomen and began to caress it preparatory to feeding that there was a sudden snap in his consciousness. His eyes sprang wide open. Sweating from every pore in his body, he was lying on his back on the divan bed attached to the one wall of the domestic cabin, staring up at the dim, mottled ceiling. "Thank the Emperor," he breathed in gasps. "It was a dream." "Maynard!" Ruggiero froze. He did not dare look. There was only a single electro candle burning, set at its lowest level, and most of the cabin was swathed in darkness. From the corner came a rustling, scraping sound. As his eyes turned, despite himself in that direction, he saw a beak shape emerge from the shadows, glinting briefly in the candlelight. It receded. Then it came into view again, and with it emerged the rest of the huge, monstrous creature from the green jungle, its crested head brushing the ceiling, its repulsive bulk taking up the entire end of the cabin. Now Ruggiero lost his reason entirely. His insides turned to jelly, seized by an uncontrollable juddering. He became a terrified child, shrieking and crying in a confused babble as the thing that knew his name advanced on him. The apparition was as yet only half-formed, by turns fading, almost disappearing, only to emerge once more into near solidity before becoming transparent again, as if it had not quite accomplished the transition from dream world which had spawned it. The wing arm spread as though to embrace him like a lover, tail sting waving back and forth, the cruel beak descending as if for a kiss in order to feed on him. Suddenly the door banged open. Pelor Kaladin stood outlined in the rectangle of light from the control cabin, his face a spectacle of shock and horror as he beheld the scene. "Emperor, save us!" Such was Kaladin's abject terror that, like Ruggiero, he was unable to move, and all that came from his throat was an inane, quivering, wailing noise. Like Ruggiero, too, his intestines were writhing in fear-driven pain as though an electric current ran through them. He sagged. His vision darkened and consciousness almost left him. Then he stiffened. His warp eye seemed to expand and become more lustrous. He glared at the monster. In a bellowing voice, quite unlike the frail tones Ruggiero was accustomed to hearing from him, he propelled words at the creature as though they were weapons. "In nomine di Imperatus, Tabia Imperio Forde Demon, ne nos molesto, Iterium, ebe ex loc, el redio eonde veste, vene nequum, un mundum mortalium." The extraordinary beast reared up and advanced on Kaladin. It flickered, almost vanished, then resurged with an incoherent roaring and cackling. Again, Kaladin pronounced the resounding words of exorcism. The monster shivered and shook and quaked. The immense beak gaped and exhaled a glowing purple smoke that brought with it an indescribable stench, a combination of burning corruption, rotting flesh, all mingled in some indefinable manner with the most enchanting aromas, so that one could not tell which were repulsive and which enchanting. Then ragged holes appeared in what was left of the monster. It was disintegrating. With a sudden screech, it collapsed inwards as though sucked to a central point and was gone, leaving behind an unbearable stink and a sensation of intense heat which departed only gradually. With a shudder, Kaladin closed all three of his eyes. He sagged, gripping the doorframe, but lacked the strength to hold on to it and slid to the floor, where he began to sob. His mind numb with a terror so great that he wouldn't have thought it possible to feel it and still live. Ruggalo was still shaking and babbling incoherently on the bed. Minutes must have passed before Kaladin could venture into the cabin to discover that sanity had left the trader altogether.
"Help me, help me, Divine Emperor, Potens Terribilis, Severe of Mankind, help me!"
Kaladin reached out and slapped Ruggalo sharply in the face. Then he forced him off the bed and half-dragged him into the control cabin, where he dumped him on one of the two chairs at the table, taking the other himself. Ruggalo's hysterical prayers fell to an incoherent mutter. As for Kaladin, his strength seemed to have left him. He was like a puppet with cut strings.
What was that? Ruggalo mumbled. In Emperor's name, what was that?
A demon, Kaladin quivered. It was a demon.
Ruggalo was still shaking uncontrollably.
It's the jewel, he confessed. I used the dream gem. It came out of my dream.
We must destroy it. Go and get it.
I can't. I'm too afraid.
Where is it?
Under the pillow.
Summoning all his remaining courage, Kaladin rose and gingerly stepped into the living quarters. The deodorizing unit, a necessary piece of equipment in any spaceship with a confined living space, was whining away energetically to eradicate the extraordinary stench exhaled by the warp thing. The cabin had a hallucinatory quality, an unnatural depth which seemed to stare back at him, the walls glowing with an eerie life of their own, as if the demon possessed an intensity of life and consciousness far greater than that of physical creatures, and its aura still lingered. He lifted the pillow. Where the gem would have been lay a patch of blue dust. Perhaps it had crumbled when he banished the demon. He returned to the control cabin. Neither man spoke for a long time. Then, in a tone of quiet admonishment, Kaladin said,
"You see, it's true. Demons do exist."
Abjectly, Ruggalo nodded.
"I've been so foolish."
"Yes, I'm afraid you have. No wonder Gundrum made off without bothering to talk to us again. Do you understand? He was making a gift of you to the demon. It was about to feast on you, body and soul. The dream gem is a conjuration device. Its purpose is to allow demons to materialize, to come out of the immaterium."
Ruggalo's normally ruddy complexion, already nearly as pallid as Kaladin's, went grey.
"Funny, Emperor, you knew how to banish it."
Kaladin looked at him.
"Navigators have psychic powers, but not enough to exorcise demons. I was like you, just shouting prayers in complete panic. In this case, a banishment formula I learned in navigator training. It shouldn't have worked. I think it did because the demon hadn't fully materialized. It was partly a dream creature still. You were probably supposed to dream several more times before the demon was able to manifest itself," he continued. "But you used the gem while we were in the warp. That gave it a chance to get through prematurely."
There was, in fact, a little more to it than that, but Kaladin was loath to discuss the private and secret knowledge of a navigator. He had employed the banishment rite, as if by instinct. It was formulated in the arcane words of an ancient language, pre-Gothic, but he knew its meaning. "In the name of the God Emperor, I command you, fell demon, trouble us no more. Quit this place and return whence you came. Come no more to the world of mortals." It was ironic that Ruggalo, who had been an unbeliever until now, had unknowingly spoken the truth about one thing. When he thought to see his mother pleading with him from outside the ship, it must have been a demonic pretender, after all. Somehow, it must have sensed his weakness.
"There's something you had better know," Kaladin said. "I heard it from my mother. The Inquisition kills anyone who has seen a demon, or who they even suspect has seen one. That's how dangerous materializations are, so don't speak of what just happened to anybody."
Ruggalo's teeth were chattering. Insane thoughts were going through his brain. Would the demon still be there in his dreams when he went to sleep again? What would it be like to be eaten by it, body and soul? He seemed to hear its voice now, calling seductively to him, reassuring him, offering him wealth, riches, power, incomparable delights. The culminating delight of all, being to be devoured. It came to him that he had a reason for continuing in pursuit of Gundrum. The fiend had tricked him. He could get revenge by taking away his trade. Terror and greed fought within him, twisting his thoughts insanely.
"We are in a realm of madness," he shouted in desperation. "You were right all along, Pelor. We must turn back."
He found himself repeating the words of Coiler.
"To safety. The Imperium, Space Marines, the Inquisition."
He looked around him in bewilderment, as if waking up suddenly.
"Where are we?"
"I've moored the ship in a dead spot. I was asleep when I heard you screaming."
"Then take us back!"
Kaladin nodded. He stepped to the control board and took the first pilot's seat. Before pulling down the navigator's cocoon, he directed psycho power into his warp eye and started back in shock. The elaborate jungle by which he was accustomed to interpreting the warp was no longer there. Not as a jungle, at any rate. Or rather, it was a jungle torn to shreds and engulfed in a raging ocean typhoon. Shattered branches, shredded leaves, boles and boughs, splintered and smashed, all surged and whirled together, interspersed with brilliant orchids and splattered blossoms, carried hither and thither in the turbulence of an angry warp torrent it was impossible to resist. The Wandering Star, too, was part of that onrush. Kaladin stared in utter helplessness, knowing there was absolutely nothing he could do. Like driftwood in a hurricane, they were being swept directly into the eye of terror.
Thanks for watching, everybody. Please remember to give this video a like. I hope you enjoyed the high energy performance. More coming soon. Thanks for supporting the channel, everybody. You can see your names here. And if you'd like to join them, please follow the links below. It's really appreciated. And I will see you again soon. Cheers. Bye.